It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. We have emerged unscathed from the trade deadline. We are time to start looking towards the end of the year. Leagues that have trade deadlines themselves, some of those are starting to come up, and the math has changed a lot, something we've talked about in recent weeks as far as the amount of time left. Got a decent bit of news. We will start with Billy Hamilton, who is, I don't know what I think about him, and so I want to know what you think, because he is such an extreme one-category player. He is not really hitting for average. He has 15 RBI all year long. He does have 55 runs, which is decent, but he has 48 stolen bases. I'm not even sure what the question to ask is. Is this guy, what do you do with him? If you have him, do you deal him now because you might be in such good shape in steals that you can afford to move him? How do you look at Billy Hamilton? Such an extreme case.
Yeah, I think that Hamilton should be the most traded player in fantasy leagues, you know, from here until every league hits their deadline, because of just what you said. You know, he's boosted teams so much since the All-Star break, you know, that probably every Hamilton owner is at or near the top of their league in steals. And if he's not helping you in steals, then you don't really want him even in your lineup. I mean, I agree with you. I agree with what you said. Like, his run scored pace, especially now that he's been hitting at the top of the lineup, is good enough to, so he's a little more into one category player, but not much. But there, that being said, there has to be teams in every league that would benefit so greatly from him. So I feel like in most leagues, because people have gotten so many steals from him, you know, he needs to be dealt for whatever, a power bat or a starting pitcher. But he should be traded in most leagues probably right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the thing is if you have him, you almost don't need him anymore. And if you don't have him, then you probably do. But you also kind of need to be in a particular position to take advantage, because, again, an outfielder who doesn't hit for average, doesn't hit home runs, and doesn't drive in runs, you better be in decent enough shape elsewhere on the board to cover for that. I think the thing is that at this point, I guess the way you look at it is he can actually help you more in steals than he's going to hurt you in average home runs RBI. I mean, is that a fair way to look at it at this point, where he could get you, goodness, I mean, he wouldn't shock anybody if he got you 30 more steals the rest of the way.
Yeah, I agree. And overall, he is quite valuable because of, like, the 30 steals are just so valuable. And, you know, I think, you know, every Hamilton owner, just go to your standings. If you're in a roto league, go to your standings, you know, like, sort by stolen bases. Because there haven't been that many steals across the majors this year, the stolen bases category should be pretty bunched in most leagues. You know, there may be a couple people up at the top or a couple people hopelessly behind, but it should be bunched in the middle. And where there's a bunch, that means there's the ability for Hamilton to move somebody up, you know, 5, 6, 7 spots and figure out who that owner is kind of at the bottom of the bunch, and then go ahead and see what you can get for him, because he will be worth the basically no RBIs and no home runs if he's getting that many steals to that owner who can get 5 or 6 points just from him alone.
I mean, this starts getting into some, you might argue, some fairly heavy lifting, because at some point we are late enough in the season where you start saying, well, okay, if I'm here in steals, and maybe I even need to beat this person or the guy. I mean, that stuff starts playing in here in these really close races. If you're playing, look, some people who play are not going to be looking at it that closely, but people who are trying to win, that we're at that point where these margins are fine enough and where we're late enough in the year that those kind of considerations play in. I mean, how often do you – let me ask you, because you are as serious a fantasy player as there is, do you even start looking at that level? Do you start sort of going 2 moves ahead, not just here's what my team needs, but – hey, if this guy gets Billy Hamilton, if he's on the block, well, that hurts me in this way.
Yeah, I would say that line of thinking starts around now, or now maybe in Hamilton's unusual in that you could start thinking that way about him right now. I'd say in general, kind of the second half of August, I really start thinking about those things. I try to just think about, you know, put out the best lineup I can each week until maybe around the second half of August, beginning of September, and then maybe focus more on categories. But Hamilton's so unique that getting him now. The other thing that we haven't mentioned, and sometimes I forget this even myself, just because you trade for Hamilton now doesn't mean you have to use him every week for the rest of the season. You could trade for him now, move up several spots in steals, and then not use him some weeks later in September if you want to, you know, grab a power hitting outfielder off waivers or something like that, or you know, off your bench. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. You can put him in your lineup, get 15 or 20 steals out of him in the next 3 or 4 weeks, and then bench him, and you may not fall that much in those other categories in that time span just by having him in your lineup alone.
So you've got a guy who can make this kind of impact, who very well could move standings and determine who wins leagues. Let's turn this around. You've got him. What can you expect to get for him?
Yeah, I don't think that you can get, like a premium hitter for him. I was trying to decide. I thought maybe, like, you're like the Gregory Polanco type. I think that might even be a little too high. I think that's too high, even. I'm going to go kind of one step maybe below him. Like, maybe someone, like an outfielder who's sitting there. If you want to go someone balanced production, maybe someone who's sitting there now with, like, 13 homers, 13 steals, solid RBI, solid run total, you know, decent batting average, things like that. I don't know. Does that sound about right for you? I don't think you can get into the top 15 outfielders for him.
I think that's true. I wonder, you know, is there a pitching equivalent? Is there a pitcher type that would make sense in a Hamilton deal?
Yeah, I'd say not an ace, not even probably a high-end number two starter, but maybe like a Matt Shoemaker type, like someone who's like a Jason Hamill type. I don't know. Does that feel about right to you? Like someone who's pitching well, but definitely isn't in the, you know, the ace level class.
I think that's reasonable. I'll put it this way. I think if I were looking to move Hamilton, I'd be happy to get a guy like that.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, for an owner, like I think like that's the kind of guy who in a mixed league, you put him in your lineup and you leave him there. I mean, you could go for Kyle Hendricks, someone who's maybe pitching a little over his head right now, but has great numbers this season, but again, isn't really regarded as one of the top 15 or 20 starters. Like, I think if you go down to that kind of spot, like 25th or so in the rankings, and again, it has to be, it's really so unique. It's got to be a certain owner in your league that it'll just depend kind of what they have to offer.
And look, I know we're kind of really milking this topic dry, but I think there's a lot of, I think this is not just about Billy Hamilton, there's a lot of sort of strategy to talk here, and so one other thought I have on this is, again, if you are looking to move him, and if you are in that position where you are in such good shape and steals that you're happy to move him, then I feel like maybe you can go with a risk-reward guy. If you're not really going to miss him because, okay, maybe you drop one spot in steals from now to the end of the way, and you're not really going to miss him in any other way, if you're in that kind of position, then maybe you can move him for a lottery ticket type player, a really exciting young pitcher, somebody like that, somebody where if it doesn't turn out to be a lot, you're okay with that, and maybe you win big.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. In fact, in one of my leagues, I was even thinking about offering Max Kepler for him last week, and Max Kepler's kind of was just, you know, raking when he left that Indian series last week and was kind of that lottery ticket type guy. Like, he'll probably come back down to earth, but, you know, what if he doesn't? You know, what if he keeps hitting for power, stealing the odd base, hitting for a decent average, you know, the right, like he did kind of since the All-Star break, he's been quite good. So, yeah, you could go for that kind of lottery type guy, and then maybe in some formats you can get a Max Kepler, you know, plus a throw-in type guy, a Tyler Glass now. So now you've got, like, two lottery tickets for the rest of the season.
Yeah. I may be the last remaining person not completely off of the Yasiel Puig bus, but I am not completely off of that bus yet. I am at least holding him in an NL-only league. I might, if I had the bench space, but I probably wouldn't hold him in a deep mixed league. I'm obviously not holding him in a shallow mixed league. Am I still even too high on him?
No, I think in an NL only league you could keep him because I don't know what you would really drop him for that would be, you know, worth stashing in an NL only league. In a 15, so to me, about 15 teams about as deep as a mixed league will get. I know there's the odd 20 teamer, but basically 15. I would say in that league, he goes to your bench and the first time you see someone on waivers that you want, you know, you drop them. But to be honest, in some of my 15-team mixed leagues, I have trouble even keeping useful players on my bench because those leagues are so deep. So I might keep him, you know, over just a reliever or something like that that I can afford to cut, or someone who was, you know, wasn't hitting well and doesn't have much upside. So I would say in that format, I'd be fine with sending him to waivers, but I wouldn't have to do it. Anything deeper than 15-team mix, though, I think he's got to go to waivers.
I'm pretty excited about Gary Sanchez, not just, I mean, obviously in part because there will be at-bats a designated hitter, but there are rumblings that the Yankees are at least interested in trading Brian McCann. Mark Teixeira is not going to play every single day. I think that they're pretty close to everyday at-bats for Gary Sanchez from here the rest of the way. And I think he's a pretty intriguing hitter. Now, it's going to be a tough role for him to have. Catchers tend to come along a little slower offensively because of the demands of catching. But again, he may not be catching every day. That might make it a little easier, though he might also be going to all those meetings and putting in that work anyway, in which case it might be harder. But I think that I'm pretty optimistic on Sanchez. How high are you on him?
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in him. I picked him up and paid heavily for him in one league where I really needed a catcher in a two-catcher league last week. I think that he'll get in the lineup probably 5 days a week, like in a typical six-day week. I think he gets five starts a week going forward. My guess would be maybe two behind the plate and three at DH. You know, and McCann kind of starts three or four behind the plate and one or two at DH and everything the rest of the way. Now, if he's starting five games a week, maybe four in some weeks, that's as much as any catcher basically in baseball. Hardly any catcher starts six games in a week. So the playing time's fine. You know, we'll see how he hits, but he was hitting fine in AAA, and the bar at catcher is just so low that if he can hit 250 or 260 with just the occasional home run, you know, one a week or one every 10 days, then he's really doing as well as pretty much almost every catcher so far this season. So I'm not saying he's a top 10 catcher yet, but I could see him totally in the top 15 and definitely in the top 20 the rest of the way.
Yeah, that kind of thing wouldn't surprise me at all. I think, you know, it's not a given. I'm not saying it will happen, but I think the upside is pretty high here. I mean, this is a guy who has hit for decent power all along, has stolen a few bases in the minors. I mean, that tends to go away, but I think he's going to be put in friendly situations. You know, they're probably not going to start him against the most devastating right-handed starters. They're going to be looking for ways to him to succeed. So I am intrigued by what he can offer. I'm not dropping everything to get him, but I'm definitely at least interested.
So would you drop, let's say, you know, in a one-catcher league, if you had just kind of a blah catcher, a Matt Wieters, a Derek Norris, you know, one of those, would you make the switch to him and maybe chase that potential, or would you just stick with the kind of blah guy that at least gets you some counting stats so far?
Well, that's another one of those where we're at the point in the season where it would probably depend in part on where I was. It would depend on sort of, do I need to take the risk or am I good sort of muddling along with what I've got would probably have the most impact on that decision.
Yeah, and it's just, I think that's a good point, and it's like those are kind of the bottom end of the top 10 or so or top 12 catchers right now. So, you know, I mean, he's already in that discussion.
We stay at catcher where it's Wilson Ramos has been absolutely unbelievable. Wilson Ramos is probably going to get significant MVP votes. I don't think he's going to get number one MVP votes, but it won't surprise me at all if Wilson Ramos gets third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh place kind of votes when the MVP balloting is announced in November. He's having that kind of year. He's hitting .336, hitting for power. He's driving in runs. He's hitting in the heart of a good lineup. He's playing a lot. And Buster Posey, who is weirdly underrated to me in baseball as a whole, because in addition to being a great hitter at catcher, he's an excellent catcher, is having really a fine year, but not a great fantasy year. He's pretty good, but 54 RBI. He's hitting .291, which is his lowest since 2011. I really like Posey. I'm a big Posey fan, but I'm not sure. I think I'm less worried about the average, but I think because of the power, I might rather have Ramos the rest of the way this year in fantasy than Posey. What about you?
I think I would still rather have Posey. I mean, I know it's a few more home runs for Ramos so far, but like the rest of the counting stats are pretty much like the runs and RBI totals between them are pretty much identical. Posey does have six steals, which is kind of sneaky.
Yeah.
So if you add up, so Posey combined home runs and steals, which sometimes I like to think about for players, is actually even with Ramos. You know, and his combined RBIs and runs are pretty much identical. So it's really just batting average that he's fallen behind. And while Ramos could hit for a higher average than Posey the rest of the way, I have trouble. Like, Posey's a career 308 hitter. I have trouble projecting Ramos to hit for a higher average. So I would rather have Posey. I might rather have Jonathan Lucroy too, but I'm not sure. I think that one's pretty close for me. But it's pretty. I agree with you that Ramos is going to get MVP votes.
It's interesting because, you know, you mentioned Lucroy, and the thing you talked about a couple of weeks ago that I think makes a lot of sense is, even though he's going to a very good situation, you do kind of wonder about that transition. Again, these are little things, but he is learning new pitchers. Texas in August is not exactly the easiest place for a catcher. I mean, it's certainly a good place to hit, but, you know, those sort of little fringe factors make me kind of wonder a little about Lucroy, even though, of course, he is moving into that outstanding lineup. Beyond those guys, there's
the drop-off that's huge.
That's the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, you have one of those three, or you're just, you know, crossing your fingers. I mean, JT Realmuto hits for average, which is good, and steals some bases. He's probably maybe the next guy, I'm not sure. But, yeah, after that, the drop-off after those three is huge.
So, Brandon Crawford is, as you note, I'm a big fan of his as a player. He's a guy who does so many things. You know, kind of the same boat as Posey, just a guy who does so many things well on a baseball field, offensively, defensively, on the bases, just a good player. But I'm a little puzzled, and I'm sure the numbers say why. I'm a little puzzled. Does this just say that shortstop is really deep, that, as you note, he is the 18th ranked shortstop, 277, 11 homers, 71 RBI, 4 steals. These are not spectacular numbers, but they're pretty good. What am I missing? Is this just a really deep position?
Yeah, it's become incredibly deep. And, I was noticing Corey Seager is having an amazing season, is barely a top 10 shortstop this year. I mean, it's become as deep as any position this year. We've just seen this huge influx, you know, with Seager, with Francisco Lindor, Carlos Correa, with Manny Machado gaining shortstop eligibility, and then Eduardo Nunez kind of coming out of nowhere, really coming out of nowhere this season. Shortstop is just so deep. And then Crawford does have, like, his numbers are kind of, like, he doesn't score a lot of runs. That's one place where I think he kind of, in a sneaky way, lets you down. He doesn't really steal bases. He has 4, like a 5 or 6 steal guy. I think he's probably going to end up with 16 home runs and 6 steals, which is, like, it's okay, but it's not really that good. He's not a high average guy usually. His average is okay this year, but he's a career 251 hitter. He's mostly an RBI asset. And, I think the big takeaway is that is really way ahead for next March, and that's you don't have to reach for a shortstop at all. You know, if you want to take one of these guys like Seager in the early rounds, that's fine. And if you don't, you can get Brandon Crawford next year late in your draft because many, many teams are going to have shortstops and shortstops at their middle infield spot.
And you actually just set me up for the next point I wanted to make on him, which is that maybe the thing to know about Crawford is that, you know, again, he's pretty good, and I imagine there are some shallow mixed leagues where he might be even available on waivers at this point. And so maybe what a guy like Crawford does is allow you, if you want to move a shortstop for another asset, the position is so deep that you can dip in and still get something pretty good. I mean, in NL only, that's a different matter. But, you know, in a shallow mixed league, maybe what this tells you is that you could move a Seager or somebody like that, a Lindor, a Bogarts, for help elsewhere and know that you can fill in with a guy who's not going to be a black hole.
I totally agree. And, I mean, for years I felt like in any of my leagues, if you had extra middle infielders, you could for sure find someone to trade them to. So I always felt it was good to have lots of middle infielders. You know, you would always be able to go through the rosters and find someone who had just you know, really unproductive player at one of their middle infield spots, and they would probably be willing to do a trade where you picked up a little bit of value yourself on the whole because they really needed a middle infielder. This year I'm finding when I'm looking through my leagues, I'm not really seeing that. I'm looking through every roster, and I'm like, oh, those three are pretty good. Oh, those three are pretty good. Those three are pretty good. And I'm not finding anyone who would be desperate to get a middle infielder. Yet it's a big change, and I really think that next year, we'll see when we get through all the, you know, the rankings and everything next spring, but I think the takeaway will be for next spring in drafts will be to just draft the best hitter you can get in the first three or four rounds at any position and figure out the positions later in your draft because there'll be options available.
And this is, has absolutely been my experience and my I'm in a deep mixed league points league and I'm sitting Dietrich, Panic, Baez and D. Gordon.
Yeah.
There's
so many, and if you're going to look to trade them, there's not a lot of people who are desperate for them.
Nobody's interested. It looked really smart earlier in the year to kind of stock up on those guys, and it wasn't. So, listen to the other guy, not me. I'm the baseball guy. He's the fantasy guy. So.
I totally agree with you though on Brandon Crawford. I think he might also be one of those guys who's just more valuable in real baseball team than he is to a fantasy baseball team, just because he's not a big contributor. Like he's not usually a high average guy. He's not usually a 20 homer guy, and he doesn't steal bases.
Doubles, triples, and defense are things that will make a baseball team really good and a fantasy team not at all better. So, Max Kepler, I think we talked about a couple weeks ago, and I think I was maybe a little skeptical. I'm not anymore, and not so much because of the performance, though partly that, but just kind of reading and learning about this guy. And people who watch him, people who are around that organization, it seems like the general belief is this guy is legit. What do you expect from him over the next, whatever we've got, 7.5 weeks?
Yeah, I've liked him, kind of coming up and when I've watched him play. I don't know if he'll keep up this power pace. Like, he's 15 homers in 70 games. I'm not sure if he's already a 30-plus home run player, but I expect him to hit his share of homers the rest of the way. And he's a big guy. When I watch him, that was something I noticed right away when I watched him play. Looking at his minor league stats, he knows how to take a walk, so I liked that when he came up. And he can actually steal some bases. I expected him to have more steals by now than the four that he has. He hasn't been thrown out yet, though. He's just been kind of cautious. I think that he could steal more bases. When I first watched him play, I was expecting someone who was a little smaller and lighter and faster, and I was impressed by how big he was. So the power when I see him swing isn't totally shocking. So I'm hoping he can be kind of a nice, you know, diverse profile kind of guy who could get you a homer or a steal at any time.
Yeah, he is a large human. So, and those guys when they're young can do a whole lot of things. Those guys when they get a little older can sometimes be a different story. But those guys when they're young can do a lot of different things. Brad Miller, I'd almost kind of written him off, not as a guy who could contribute, but I just sort of earlier in the year I would sort of see him pop up and just think, yeah, you know, 250, a little power. He's now 260 with more power, but I'm selling high if I've got Brad Miller, and I realize that doesn't even necessarily mean selling a lot. I don't think you would get a lot, but this is a guy who a month ago was hitting, I think, 240-something. He's really hit some home runs the last few weeks, but that's about it. Even with 20 home runs, he has 48 RBI and 52 runs in a bad hitting environment on a not very good lineup. I think that right now is about the peak of Brad Miller's value. Do you like him more than I do?
No, I agree. This is the peak of his value, and he is someone that I had also kind of written off. Now I've come back around on him a little bit because there were multiple seasons where people were expecting him to break out, and it just never quite happened. So when that just doesn't happen, you know, and then you write a guy off, when he does finally come around, I do try to remember, okay, there was a reason that we were optimistic about him in the first place, and that was, I think with him originally, it was that ability, like I was mentioning with Kepler, to give you a home run or a steal at any time. When I look at him, though, for this season, he's not really doing anything differently other than that he's hit a few more home runs than we've expected. Like, he's not striking out less. He's not walking more. His batting average is the same. You know, he's swinging and missing just as often. So I kind of feel like if you own Brad Miller, you've just been a little bit fortunate to get the 20 home runs so far. I don't know if, like you said, I don't know if you can sell really high on him. I'm not sure if you can get a lot for him. But maybe where you could get something for him, and we've done a lot of good trade talk today in general, like big picture stuff, is if you wanted to make a move and he was like the second guy in a 2-for-2,
sure,
the other owner might be much more amenable to taking him, seeing that 20 home run total beside his name, than they would have been if he had 12.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think he is at least a guy that somebody would perceive as adding value to a deal, whereas maybe a month ago you'd see that extra name and you'd think somebody was just putting a name in and sort of, nah, I'll just take the fewer guys. Now I think maybe you view that as, oh yeah, that's a little added value. I think that makes some sense.
Yeah, I think that's it. Like, if you really wanted Francisco Lindor or Carlos Correa and the other person, you know, you're going to give them an outfielder or something, and they say, okay, well, what are you going to give me to replace him in my middle infield? Now, if you say, well, okay, and I'll give you Brad Miller, they say, okay, 20 home runs, I'll take that. Whereas if he had 11 home runs and 6 steals right now, they might say, oh, no, I don't want that guy. He's, you know, waiver wire level player.
And I'm actually glad you had another point, because that reminded me of something else I wanted to say on this topic, which is a little plug here for anybody who is interested. We have a piece going up on raised.mlb.com today on Brad Miller from the associate reporter Sam Blum. And Sam examined the power spike and noted that part of this is a really big spike in home runs for fly ball. But on the flip side of that, noted that the distance on his home runs is significant. He is hitting the ball a long way, so it's not like he's had a few extra balls sneak over the wall. So it's this weird, I sort of feel like I want to find out even more as to, on the one hand, why that spike has happened, but on the other hand, it's partly happened because he's hitting the ball a really, really long way. So the point being, it might be fluky or it might not based on which of those you look at, but you should go read the piece because it was interesting and a good read. We move on to the starting pitchers, and speaking of balls going a long way, John Gray had a rough one at Coors earlier this week against a pretty good Marlins offense. I mean, I think it's worth remembering. We don't generally think of them as a team that – we sort of think of it as when you get roughed up by the Marlins, oh, the Marlins. Marlins are pretty good offense. They got a lot of guys who can do damage. And that was the first bad one in a long time, and I have been pretty consistent that don't want no Rocky starters. But Gray, before that start, over his previous, 13 starts, was averaging more than 6 per start, 2.61 ERA, a strikeout per inning. He's been really good. And to me, this start is not get off the bandwagon. It's just a reminder that this is what you're dealing with. This is what you will be dealing with nearly any even really good starter at Coors Field. The bad ones are sometimes going to go really bad. And I think for a good pitcher, that's probably the biggest difference at Coors, is that when it's bad, it's really bad. So how do you account for that if you have Gray?
Yeah, I think it's just that sobering moment where you remember that he's always going to, as long as he's a member of the Rockies, he's going to have to deal with this. And when he was going well, I was hearing on some other podcasts or reading in some other articles, he's a top 30 starter now. And I totally respect his talent and that he will have many really good starts, but I just don't feel like I can put a Rocky starter in the top 30 fantasy starters unless he's really done it for a season or two. It's going to take a lot to show me that. I probably won't own John Gray in any leagues next year because someone will want him more than I will. Now, that being said, almost every starter has a clunker at least once during the season, something that resembles what happened to him in his last start. But I can't convince myself that that will be limited to one start per season. And if he has 4 of those at home or something over the course of the year, that'll have a pretty significant effect on his ratios. And you don't really ever know when they're going to happen. I mean, they're probably going to happen at Coors, but if he's not a top 30 starter, if you're going to sit him for all his home starts. And I don't think that's totally the answer either in a lot of leagues. If you want to sit him for all his home starts, now he's not a top 50 starter. If you're going to use him in the home starts, like, I feel like it could almost happen at any given time. The Marlins lineup is good. It's not the Cubs or anything. He's going to have matchups even harder than that one probably a few times during the season.
Yeah, for sure. Dylan Bundy, a guy I have wanted to be good for so long, and a guy I was skeptical at first, is now, I mean, pitching as well as absolutely anybody on the planet. He's been dominant. I'm on now, and that means that he's going to blow up now, because that's the way it is with me and young Orioles starters. We call this the Gausman effect. I'm even looking to trade for him, I think. If somebody I love his talent so much that even though I've been burned before, my thought on Bundy is if somebody wants to sell high, I am very interested in being the other end of that equation. I don't think he's going to keep this up because nobody would, but I think he might be really good from here to the end of the year. But I also understand the other side of that. I'm kind of conflicted. I just love the talent so much that I think I'm willing to take the risk. So talk me down from that.
No, I don't think I'm going to talk you down that much. I think that his value, you're right, to trade for him right now would be a bit of a buying high, but not totally, because I don't think you're going to have to pay, like he's had, you know, about four good starts in a row. So you're not going to have to pay what you normally like would for someone who's you know, put up the numbers he has in his last four starts. Maybe his best value in a trade is you're actually looking to move a pitcher. So you're looking to move Chris Sale to get offense. And you're talking to the Bundy owner, and you say, well, I need someone to replace the pitching spot. I'll give you Sale. You give me an offensive player I need and throw in Bundy to even up the value. And now, and maybe you get lucky and Bundy pitches just as well as Sale the rest of the season or pretty close. I think that's where you could pick him up and kind of buy him without buying super high right now.
The question to me on Bundy, at least as much as the performance, probably more than the performance, though it's tied in with performance, but less the ability level and more, I do worry just how he holds up. This is a guy with a history of health problems, the guy who's never done what they're asking him to do to keep pitching this deep into a year. I don't have it off the top of my head, but I'm guessing that the total number of pitches thrown by Dylan Bundy as a professional pitcher in September in his life is very low. So to me, the one worry is just not that he's not really good, but that in being asked to do something that he's never done before, at some point I do worry that starts to tell. And not even that he gets hurt, but that he fatigues. But I guess you just kind of have to bake that in. If you're talking about a Bundy deal, you just kind of bake that in.
Yeah, I think so. And, I mean, you're not, like I said, you're not going to pay for what he has been doing. You're going to pay for less than that. And sometimes you have to take a chance. You know, he's the kind of guy maybe you take a chance on in a trade if you feel like you need to improve your pitching numbers. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. You're right, he could hit a wall at some point in September. I mean, there's seven more weeks after this one, so I'm going to guess that he has a couple two-start weeks in there, and he makes about nine more starts. So, you know, are you willing to kind of play with fire for nine starts? I could see it. And, I mean, if you have to jump off on September 15th because he has a bad start and then you want to not use him the last couple weeks, then that's fine. But maybe you get lucky and because he spent so much time in the bullpen earlier this season, maybe he holds up fine. You know, do we see the effects of him throwing more innings? Do we see the injury effect next season? That's not really a concern right now.
So because of the extensive strategy conversation at the beginning of this, because of our extensive Billy Hamilton talk, we are running a little tight, so we'll tighten it up a little here. I do want to ask about Kyle Hendricks, who I'm starting to believe in, but I'm not entirely sure what to do with him. But I kind of think this guy is, don't know exactly where to put him, but I think it's more real than not. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, totally. I've always been a Kyle Hendricks guy because he keeps his whip down. He generally keeps his ERA down, too. I'm not putting him in the top 10 or 12 starters because he doesn't throw the innings. If you look at him compared to the other ERA leaders, he has fewer innings than most of them. He has a lot of, like, five and something or six flat inning starts, not a lot of seven inning starts, although he does mix in some. I think that keeps him out of the top 10 or 12, but I think he's in the, you know, 15th to 20 range, and it doesn't hurt that he's supported by arguably the best team in baseball with now a solid bullpen,
right. And
it plays really good defense.
Yeah, I think that's the other part of the key is that everything is set up for him to succeed. We move on to the closers, and your first question to me is, would you rather own Edwin Diaz than any other new closer? And the answer is, oh my goodness, absolutely yes. To me, the question at this point is, where does he rank overall? Where is this guy for the rest of the year? Where would he rank among closers? Because I'd have him pretty high, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to not put him in the top tier, but I'll put him near the top of the second tier. So take out the the one like the Chapmans and the ones who have done it for a long time and can get you a lot of strikeouts, and I'll put them so out of those top. But then that top tier is starting to fall apart, like Kimbrel, Wade Davis, like that top tier is starting to fall apart. Like, could he? I wouldn't be shocked if he was a top five closer the rest of the season. Like, save chances. Really, what you want? You can't predict the save chances that well, and he's on a team that's decent. But what you really want from your closer then is a lot of strikeouts and solid ratios, and I think he's going to do both of those things really, really well, especially the strikeouts. So, you know, I wouldn't be completely shocked if he's the number one closer the rest of the season. If he gets enough save chances, he's going to have a lot of strikeouts.
Straight up, would you rather have him or Kimbrel to the end of the year?
Diaz. I think Diaz. I don't want to mess around with Kimbrel and injury and everything. I'll just take the guy who's healthy and striking everyone out. And that would have been absurd to say, you know, in the middle of June.
Right, but I totally agree. I mean, what he is doing is ludicrous, and it's Kyle Barraclough strikeouts, but not walking people, and that's pretty good.
This is a guy who could be a top five closer, like for our rankings next season. I don't see him losing the job, so he could be that high next season.
Marlins and Rockies both with changes. I am not super high on Fernando Rodney, and while Adam Ottavino is one of my favorite guys, I'm not at all high on him at this point until he sort of shows he's a little farther along. I'd probably rather have Rodney. I think Rodney is probably a must-own at this point. I think Ottavino is not necessarily. How do you look at those two guys?
Yeah, I would rather have Rodney. It's pretty close because Ottavino has the chance to be the closer, you know, right through the final day of the season. And assuming A.J. Ramos comes back, Rodney probably doesn't. He could, but I think it's a little unlikely. I wouldn't say it's totally out of the realm of possibility that Rodney just does really well and is their closer all the way, but I don't see it. Just the Coors Field and, like, the Rockies have gone through a lot of closers and even some decent pitchers that couldn't last in the job. So it's just not a lock at all that Ottavino will keep it. You know, it's kind of, if you need saves, there's been so many new closers lately that I'm just not sure if anyone really needs these guys that wanted them. Like, we just did a show last week where we talked about probably a half a dozen new closers. But if there's people out there in 15-team leagues that still need saves, like, they need to be picked up.
Yep. A couple quick injury topics. Melvin Upton, pretty much a must-own at this point for the next couple of weeks while he's playing, isn't he? In that ballpark, in that lineup, and playing every day?
I don't know. I know he stole three bases kind of out of nowhere last night, but he's been a bit of a mess since he got to Toronto. Like, he's striking out at an extremely high rate, hasn't shown any power at all. Like, it could, I think if you need steals, then definitely he's a guy you should use for a couple weeks. And if he hurts your batting average, then he hurts your batting average. Just get him and hope for a few steals. But I wouldn't rush out to get him this late in the season if I didn't. And they think Pilar's only going to be the minimum. So,
yeah,
I wouldn't rush out to get him. Like, I don't have in front of me his strikeout-to-walk ratio or walk-strikeout ratio since he joined the Blue Jays, but he has not hit well at all, really, since the All-Star break.
You don't think, though, that there's at least some reasonable case that with regular at-bats he'll find his rhythm a little more?
Yeah, no, I do see that as a possibility. It's just that with Upton, like, we have so much track record of lack of success in recent seasons before he had really got kind of caught fire for 2 months. So it's like, do you believe he can recapture the 2 months, or was the 2 months or so just 2 months and we're back to like the 2013-14 and part of 2015 Upton? He is to me really risky, but he can't kill your batting average in 2 weeks by himself. So
right.
If you need steals, yeah, by all means, go ahead and use them for sure.
A sort of philosophical question. As we get to the point in the year where a DL stint is a third of the remaining season, how do you deal with guys who are going on the DL for 2 or 3 weeks with 6 or 7, well, I think it's 7.5 weeks left remaining in the season, when they are not stars? Are you at the point where you are quicker with that drop click, or are you still trying to find space on your roster for contributor but not star injured players?
Yeah, no, I'm much quicker with the drop click now than I would have been before. I mean, I like to think of it as like on a percentage basis. So as I mentioned, 7 weeks left. If someone's going to miss 2 or 3, well, that's the equivalent of them missing, you know, more than a month or so from the beginning of the season. So maybe up to 2 months from the beginning of the season as far as, like, the percentage of what's left in the season. And if you said that about a Kevin Pillar type, I'd say, oh, just don't even bother rostering him at the start of the year. So, yeah, I'm fine in, like, in 10, 12-team leagues with dropping guys like that when they go on the DL. They might still be there for you to pick up. Leagues are less active late in the season. Like, when they come back, you might be able to just pick them up. I'm not going to drop a Jose Bautista or someone like that if they're out for a couple of weeks, but I think you have to, unless you have DL space. Like,
right.
If I can drop a Kevin Pillar, David Peralta, someone like that, and pick up, say, a pitcher I can stream right now or another closer that I can get in and out of my lineup, I think you have to make the move.
We move to two start pitchers, and I kind of like this list. I like it more than some weeks. It includes Bartolo, Finnegan, Daniel Norris, Robbie Ray, Vogelsong, Smiley. A couple of guys I like on here a lot. Bartolo at Arizona, which is a tough place to pitch, but not a good team. At San Francisco, which is a good team, but not a good place to pitch, but I like the pitcher. Smiley, who, you know, he's been really good lately, which means that as soon as you pick him up, he's going to blow up again. But he's been really good lately, and at home against San Diego and Texas, I know Texas is a good team, but home for those two matchups, I like that a lot. Anybody else on that list you like, and are you with me on those two?
Yeah, I am with you on those two, and although Smiley's risky, like, as you said, he kind of does seem to go in peaks and valleys. He's on a peak right now. I like Robbie Ray, especially if you're just looking for strikeouts. I mean, he's been striking out a lot of batters recently. Home against the Mets, I can live with that, and then he goes to San Diego in that lineup. It's not that bad, but, I mean, after trading away Kemp and Upton, it's a little worse than it was. And I don't mind Daniel Norris, a couple home starts. The Boston one's a little worrisome, but Boston hasn't been hitting that well lately, so I'm willing to consider it. And he's got a home date against the Royals for his other start, and to me that's not scary. And I don't think Norris is great yet, but he hasn't really been getting – he doesn't get blown up, so I'm willing to consider him too.
All right, that's the Fantasy 411. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking some time to talk.